views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I am joined by my delightful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Great to be here on this auspicious week, right? We're so a very important human being this week, huh? Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And works so well with our theme for January, which is inclusive social action. We're on the third week, so it's a delight, Dorothy, to continue this really interesting and really vitally important conversation. We started off January by talking about the importance of inclusive social action, and that word inclusive really stuck out for me anyway in that first week, really talking about ways in which we can bring about change, and it's not just ending conflict, but resulting in greater harmony than when it all began. So the importance of inclusive social action. And then the second week, we talked about how do we prepare ourselves, preparing for inclusive social action. Again, really wonderful conversation. And this week, we're going to talk about implementing inclusive social action. So it just keeps unfolding.
Right.
Yeah, go on.
You want some quotes, Steve, to start us off?
That sounds great.
I've got three this week. The first is from Eli Weisel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest. And then another one, evil is a hydra with many heads, and the more of them you cut off, the more it grows. Kind of like pruning a garden. If hydras have to be starved to death. Mm. And then the last one is from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse and you say you are neutral, the mouse will not appreciate your neutrality.
Mm. Very, very good. Yeah, I mean, the evil hydra being starved to death, you know, that's worth mentioning again, because we've talked about that. Just by cutting off a head, it grows. That really, you've got to find a way. You've got to be clever. It really is a new paradigm, this idea of inclusive social action, that's not just meeting evil with more of a force to squash it. That really is it about coming at it so that it can be eliminated. You know, the ageless wisdom says to close the door where evil dwells, really that it's about cutting it off in
That's
a different
right.
way. Yes.
Yeah. And I thought it might be helpful to give the definition that we're using again of inclusive social action. Steve, in case we have people with us that weren't with us in week one. So when we say inclusive social action, what we mean is intentional action to stop specific violence in a manner that does not further divisiveness. And it's inclusive because it's grounded in an awareness that we are all in this together. We are all interconnected through this cosmic energy field of which, you know, we are all a part. And I think to myself, I don't know if this is an analogy that works for other people, but it's kind of like tough love at the societal level. It is a compassionate saying, no, this is not okay, no further, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really exposing the truth exposing the harm, shedding light on the harm. Mm-hmm. And I find that revealing the truths of who we are and the harm that divisiveness does is really an important part of it. That inclusivity, again, comes to the forefront for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. I appreciate mm-hmm. that. So how
yeah,
did,
and-
Dorothy, what we should, I'd love to just get right into that. Were you going to continue that?
I just wanted to say that it's, to our listeners, part of what we're trying to bring forward is that each of us has a responsibility for how we are and how we interface with whatever is going on around us. There's not just one right way to be, but to be apathetic or neutral or to look away, to ignore harm that is happening, means that we are complicit. And so what we're trying to wrestle with is how do we stop being complicit? How do we recognize that we have reflexively often, we react with apathy or criticism rather than with compassionate action to address the harm that is taking place?
Yeah, apathy was another word that came through quite a bit in our first couple shows. For sure, and that it's just simply not acceptable. That it is harmful in and of itself. Yes, and it's just not enough to criticize and pass judgment on those that we see being harmful or creating divisiveness, because in and of itself, criticism and judgment are divisive. So to be mindful of that and find a new way of being, a new way to implement inclusive social action. Very good.
Mm-hmm. So if we think about how we approach our lives, and we're talking about implementing, to me, one of the first practices that we need to develop or strengthen in ourselves as a first response is to evaluate what's going to notice, but to evaluate what's going on. It's how much harm is being created? Oftentimes, harm escalates. If nothing is done to stop it, it just grows and grows and grows. And it's often easier to stop, or it's easier to take a stand when it's small. I mean, not that one ever wants to dismiss harm in any form, in any amount, but getting used to looking at things as they are beginning and not letting them kind of get away from us. And it's important for us to keep in mind what the consequences are for us of acting. I'm certainly not advocating that people should act in a way that puts them in harm's way, although sometimes that's unavoidable. But it's also important to recognize the motivation of the person perpetrating the harm. Sometimes it comes from just thoughtlessness, that a person is not aware of what they're doing. They're not aware of the harm that they're creating. And simply making them aware, bringing it into their consciousness, is enough for them to self-regulate and to stop. But sometimes the motivation of the perpetrator is to create chaos, to create harm. Some people, unfortunately, are delighted by the feeling that other people are being hurt. They feel powerful as a result. And those are situations where we absolutely have to find ways to say, this is not okay.
Yes, yes. And find ways, even if it's systematically, through the system, to change those actions. Sometimes if it's a person who is perpetrating harm for power, and that is, we don't want to put ourselves in harm's way. Certainly if it's somebody that is unaware and we can find a way to help make them aware, to educate them or to make them aware of that ignorance, really. It seems much easier, whereas it gets a little more complex when we've got someone who is, their intention has got evil in its more, as opposed to just not knowing and being in a process mm-hmm. of learning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that I found I need to become that can be an alert for me is when people say, well, that's just the way things are. Usually that's said in a context where harm is being perpetrated, but the harm has gone on so long that people just accept it as, you know, well, of course it's going to be that way. And if we don't intervene, if we don't say, no, this is not acceptable, I'm unwilling to accept that this is just the way things are, things will never change.
Or they're well aware that human beings can have a tendency towards apathy and looking the other way. And they're using that, oh, that's just the way things are, almost as a manipulation or a cover-up. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a good saying to keep in mind when we hear that, to say, well, no, it's not just the way things are. Or if it is the way things are, the word just is what stands out. You know, well, perhaps it's not just.
Right, you know, right.
That perhaps justice is necessary. And if it is the way things are, then we need to change that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one in our current political environment, one of the dynamics that you and I have talked about that we need to be particularly alert to, it's a form of apathy, is that kind of numbness that when the harm occurs over and over and over and over again, or the falsity is said over and over and over again, and there continue to be crises and disruptions, we can just start feeling like, look at, just count me out, you know,
yeah.
it's too much.
Overload.
And that's very dangerous, dangerous, because then we're really nurturing harm. We're allowing it to grow. We're giving it the space.
Or we focus on the criticism and the evaluation or the judgment about the drama, and we sort of lose sight of the actual harm that's being done, and we focus on everybody's opinion about it. You know, we live in the world of opinion, where on social media we see an image or a news story, and then we see a news feed that seems to be a miles long, or a response feed, and you get so involved on people's responses and reactions and criticisms and statements about this harmful act or something truly evil that you forget, you know, hey, let's really focus on the evil here. You know, something really awful has happened, and we need to find a way to correct this or do something about it, and not just talk in circles, know, about each other's response to it. It becomes just a big game of judgment and criticism. Yeah. I also think it's interesting. Go on, Dorothy.
No, I just wanted to add that I wanted to link what you were just saying back to the fact that our initial reflex tends so often to be critical rather than compassionate.
Yes.
And to watch that in ourselves, because we're not going to find the solution, the inclusive social action solution, unless we can tap into compassion.
Well, and that was such a wonderful part of our first show, when we talked quite a bit about walking a mile in another's shoes. You know, it's that coming from the heart that we really need to understand and have compassion for other people who are experiencing harm or on the other end of divisiveness. Dorothy, we're at our first break. Stick with us. We'll be back after these words.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Well, Welcome back, listeners. It is great to be back with you. Dorothy, we always like to take a little bit of time to talk about our organizations. The Spirit Fire Radio is a collaboration between the School for Esoteric Studies and Spirit Fire, a delightful collaboration. So a few words about each of our organizations may pick your interest. Dorothy, would you like to start?
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks. Yes, the School for Esoteric Studies is an educational nonprofit whose primary focus is on providing training for people who have a spiritual practice that they wish to deepen. We also have a number of group initiatives that we initiate or participate in. One of them is intentional collaboration with other like-minded groups, and this Spirit Fire Radio is an example of that. We're so delighted to be working with Spirit Fire. And if you belong to an organization that might want to collaborate with us, please take a look at esotericstudies.net, and you'll find information about the type of collaborations that that we wish to enter into or that we are already part of. Our most recent initiative is a series of white papers on inclusive social action. They are posted on our website at esotericstudies.net. You can find the link on our homepage. Please, if you're interested at all in this topic, take the time to download the papers and send us any comments. We have already been getting comments from individuals and groups in a number of different countries saying this is a very critical topic, wondering if maybe some task forces could be set up. So please do join us in the conversation. Once again, esotericstudies.net.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Dorothy. And I am here on behalf of Spirit Fire. We are also an educational nonprofit. Our mission is to educate people on the importance of spirituality and really teach them how to cultivate consciousness in their everyday lives. We do that mainly with a meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness, as well as online classes. That meditation practice is online as well, free. We're about to start a brand new round in a couple of weeks. We have a 14-week meditation program, so if you are interested in bringing meditation or developing a practice or deepening an existing practice, you may want to check that out. You can find out more about that at spiritfire.com. We also have a meditative retreat center in Western Massachusetts where we have retreats that support those online practices. We have a wonderful intentions retreat coming up this weekend. Looking great forward to it in the snowy New England. It's quite snowy here. So, Dorothy, you know, in talking about when to act, I know we have talked about being aware, you know, preparing is a big part of that, being ready. So when you've got to act, that you feel like you are prepared, that you know the terrain. And we've talked a little bit about what to look out for in terms of people. I wondered if we could sort of talk about that, bring that back into conversation.
Sure. So, Steve, I think there are a number of different signals that we can look for, and many of these relate to environments that are divisive through the lens of duality, an us-them perspective, which we've talked about before on this show. One of the obvious groups, group memberships that we can be aware of is persons who are members of or condoning of hate groups. And the Southern Poverty Law Center keeps a running account of the various hate groups in the United States, if people want to take a look at that. But basically, one can define these groups as groups whose primary purpose is to promote animosity, hostility, or malice towards those who belong to a different group. So it's a very intense expression of that us-them dynamic. Then we have the less formal espousal of an us-them ideology that's just basically saying we are not all one. And so, for example, when the plight of families being separated at the southern border of the United States came to people's awareness, one of the initial responses of some people or in some groups was, well, they're not us. So with the implication that whatever happens to those families, to those children, I don't care about. Why should I care? Because they're not part of us. And then there's just the plain self-focus, you know, where somebody is so wrapped up in their own self-interest in getting something for themselves or to self-aggrandize that they want to do, that they do that at the expense of others, and so harm is created kind of in their path. Then we have the ends justify the means philosophy, which is, you know, people being willing to say or do anything, including lying or bending or breaking the law, in order to advance their own interests, and regardless of the cost to other people. And certainly with the government shutdown in the U.S., we're seeing the escalating harm being done to others by this kind of focus at the administrative level. Then we have people that kind of purposely act in a divisive rather than a collaborative manner. You know, they seem to forget that we don't always have to agree with each other, but we do need to respect the different perspectives that others bring. And actually, if we will listen, if we will try to understand where someone else is coming from, and they are not, I mean, someone who's not actively trying to create harm, that it can enrich our lives. Then we have the whole attitude of kind of my way or the highway that assumes that there's only one right way. You know, that either you do it my way or there are negative consequences for you. So, again, there is no attempt at finding a common ground, no attempt at trying to work out a collaborative solution that addresses the legitimate needs of the people involved.
Wow.
And then finally...
No, go on.
Finally, Steve. Yeah, no, I would just comment on the syndrome known as the bystander effect, where people, when they're in groups, tend to abdicate their own personal responsibility and assume that someone else will do it, or that they don't have responsibility because there are all of these other people around. And it's ironic. You would think that if you were with a group, that you would be more empowered to take action, but that's not actually the way the dynamic typically works out.
You often see that in New York City. You know, being an ex-New Yorker, you're often seeing harm being done because there are so many people put together in such small spaces, and that bystander effect just happens all the time, where you think, oh, someone else will take care of that. Or mm-hmm. or the group knows something that I don't know. Like, perhaps this has been going on a while. Perhaps this is a prank. It's not really violence. Your brain somehow convinces you that what you're watching is not actually harm. And that also goes to that sort of overstimulation and seeing things on TV too much, that sometimes real life becomes TV. And, mm-hmm. you know, we have to watch what our brain is doing in those situations, and also be aware that we, you know, the brain wants to default sometimes to that, you know, everybody knows something I don't know. I better not help out. So indeed, that the bystander effect happens quite a bit. And if you've got 10, you know, if you've got 10 people on a train, you're only responsible for 10% of that harm being done. Well, it's not really the case. You know, you've got 10 examples that could be said, or 10 people that could join in. But I really appreciate you framing that whole, you know, signals, you know, how to look out for people who will most likely be indifferent to harm being done to others. Dorothy, I appreciate that. What came through for me in just hearing you sort of detail that is that it really comes down to self-interest. It comes down to this idea of it's all about me. And that is the paradigm shift that needs to happen, you know, that we move away from this. Really, it seems that we are producing a culture of just megalomania. And I think of that, of the author Stephen Wright, who wrote a very scientific book on Buddhism, who said, I would have thought the opposite of spirituality was materialism, going with that we're either a materialist or a spiritualist. And he said, no, I've come to understand the opposite of spirituality is megalomania, is being so self-involved that you aren't aware that we are all interconnected, all interdependent. So all of those pointers are really helpful for us to know that when we're in the company of people or we're in a situation that vibration is present, my way or the highway, you know, or or really them, like, look at them, look what they're doing. That be aware, the flag should go up that, you know, inclusivity is what's necessary here. And how can I act in a way to bring that about? Wonderful. And how can I act, for sure, right? Don't stand by.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, we've talked over, over the various months about various myths that have gotten embedded in our society. And one of them is that people act primarily out of self-interest. Well, there's a way in which you could frame self-interest, you know, for that to be true. But in terms of the way people usually think of self-interest, it's absolutely not the case. If you watch infants, you know, very, very young children that haven't gone through, you know, a lot of the socialization, what you'll see is that they are altruistic. They are giving. And we know that physiologically we get pleasure actually from being helpful to other people. But somehow that's gotten screened out. And there's some research showing that actually the social media has reinforced a me focus. You know, here's pictures of me. Here's here's what I'm doing, as opposed to the interactive, you know, what's going on in the world, what's important to other people, how can I be helpful? I think just as an image in my mind, Steve, you know, if you've never had this experience of having a young child, a child, preschool child, come up to you and press a really sticky sweet into your hand, you know, trying to give you a present, that to me is what it's all about.
And they're so joyful, right? They just can't wait for you to have it and share. Yeah. Not only share the sticky sweet, but share the experience, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful. Beautiful, Dorothy. We're already at another break. So listeners, we'll be right back after these words.
Miss any shows during the week? We've got you covered. Yahoo! With the free Transformation Talk radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand. Yes! Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
Listeners to Spirit Fire Radio, as Dorothy and I continue our conversation on inclusive social action. Dorothy, I just wanted to mention, just before the break, we were talking about megalomania and self-referencing and self-interest that often leads to divisiveness, because we're really only concerned with ourselves and not on the other. And that is really such an important aspect of this. And, you know, both of us within our spiritual trainings are talking quite a bit to people about the importance of knowing oneself, of being an observer of, it starts with you, you know, really changing yourself is the way to change the world. So for listeners, that could sound a little bit like, wait a minute, I thought we're not supposed to be thinking about ourselves so much, but that's, they are very different things. And this idea of I want it for me, or I will get my way at the expense of others, has so much to do, as you've mentioned many times, Dorothy, this idea that, you know, there's just not enough for us all, that I want it for myself. And they're very different. The language sounds the same, but they're very different ways of approaching one's life. One, understanding group and understanding the importance of co-creating activity and collaboration, and one just total egomaniacism, right?
Absolutely, Steve. I agree. And actually, I mentioned before the break that there was a way in which you could think of self-interest, you know, that was not that egomaniacal way. And I liked what you said. I'd like to add to it that the way, the positive spin on self-interest is really being who you actually are. And I think of that Desjardins quote that we've used before of, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, not humans having a spiritual experience. Mm. When we think that we are just unique individuals able to manage our physical existence without any thought for anybody else, that we run into trouble. When we remember that we are actually energetic spiritual beings that are interconnected, that everything that we do, what we think, how we feel, how we act, affects the entire universe, then we need to, you know, that can help us with that positive self-focus, in the sense of, you know, how am I being in the world? How is my energy in the world?
And that I am an extension of that. I am an expression of that. And
that's right.
Being that true expression. So going deeper within oneself will reveal to you that you are a part mm-hmm. of that greater whole. And so that is the process. People get stuck on the looking at themselves. Stops there, right?
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. And the... Yeah, you know, we've talked about, you know, things that we can be aware of, that we can notice. We've also talked about how this is really, inclusive social action really requires a paradigm shift. And to me, what that means is that we need to rehearse. We can't expect ourselves to walk into a situation and suddenly exhibit, you know, brand new behavior or a brand new way of being without having some practice ahead of time. And to me, that, you know, there are interesting ways that we can rehearse. We can rehearse in imagination. We can think about different scenarios and what we might do. We can rehearse through discussion. I've shared with our listeners at other times, one of the things that I so appreciated about my parents when I was young, I may not have appreciated it at the time, but I certainly appreciate it in retrospect. And that is that when I was in a tough situation, they would ask me, they wouldn't criticize me for how I handled it. What they would ask is there another way that you could handle it in the future? And another way, and another way, and another way, trying to draw out 3, 4, 5 different alternatives so that I could see the situation from a number of different perspectives. And so that kind of discussion of, you know, what other options might there be, you know, how have you handled this? Can you think of another way? It can be very, very helpful to us.
And very rewarding, you know, very, very rewarding, creative, and seeing life mm-hmm. as a process. So I like that aspect of it as well.
And then, you know, through in our lives, we may not be aware of it, but we experience, most of us anyway, what's being called microaggressions, you know, small slights, ways in which we're treated as though we don't count or we're invisible. And so we can rehearse through, you know, how we respond to that. instead of just letting them slide by, take them as rehearsal opportunities. Even if we don't do something that is visible to others, within ourselves, use that for a rehearsal, you know, possibility in terms of when it's being done to us, when it's being done to others.
And just practicing inclusivity, which can be as small as just making eye contact with someone, saying hello to someone that you would normally just go about your day, or just helping mm-hmm. someone in a very small way that realizes that's actually an inclusive social action. And in a way, that is practicing. And I also wanted to say, you know, that seeing our mistakes as rehearsal, you know, we try, goodness, Dorothy, on the last show we were talking, I was bringing up something that happened at Thanksgiving where my dad was singing this very long, very sexist song that he thought was very clever and very funny. And it was very clever. The rhymes were funny. And I was offended. And it was at my house at my table at Thanksgiving with my little nephew. And though my dad thought he was being entertaining, my response was equally as sexist as the song was. I won't go into the whole thing, but when we talked about it on the show, I realized, Steve, what are you doing? You actually got all worked up. You didn't want to insult your dad. You know, and you very clearly, you know, as somebody hearing this story said, oh, you know, it could have been, you didn't say this, but illustrated that it could have been as easy as just saying, I really like the rhyming part, but the words are really awful. You know, I don't like them at all, or they don't, you know, they really don't appeal to me. I wish they could be rewritten to be more positive. Really lovely. So I think also just seeing that life is a rehearsal for you, you know, not judging yourself so much and saying, well, the next time around, I'll see that clearer, you know. So life is a rehearsal, I think.
That's right. And oftentimes we forget that the way that we learn and the way that we grow is through trying things out. It's not through being perfect.
Yeah.
And so giving ourselves slack to try things out, recognizing when other people are trying things out, giving them feedback if what they're trying out is creating harm. But having that experimental, curious approach to life rather than a reactive, critical approach.
And towards oneself, you know, really practicing not only observing situations and observing others, but observing your response to situations. You know, as you say, this is really a new way of approaching life day to day, every day. And so we've got habits, we've got patterns that are really, you know, they're embedded. And so observing is so important.
And if we recognize that so many of us are socialized or reinforced for reacting, responding in that kind of critical way, anything we can do to not react, to pause and observe what's happening and just give ourselves a moment to think about how we might want to respond will be helpful. It's also, I think part of why I keep coming back to rehearsal is that where I stumble the most is when I'm caught in a situation where I need to react immediately and, you know, or the moment passes. And so if I haven't practiced ahead of time, I'm not going to have that repertoire to pull from, that range of possible responses, so that in the moment I can respond in a way that, in looking back, I will feel was a helpful way in stopping harm.
Having the right equipment for every situation is so important. The Boy Scout in me, right? Be prepared. Have the right equipment. Dorothy, I also wanted to go to a break in a minute. I just wanted to mention, though, the importance, you know, in terms of practicing our range of actions and inclusivity, I think it can be just important to immerse yourself in group. We've mentioned before, I believe last week, about going it alone, that you know, you will not be able to go this alone. When we need such sweeping change, This will really happen as a result of community and as a result of group. So moving within that group experience is really helpful in generating this experience, in generating opportunities to practice. So, you know, volunteer at a shelter, join some goodwill endeavor. Our town does a town cleanup twice a year. Join in that. Feel the vibration. See how to work together. See what collaboration means. See what happens when someone wants to get their way, but there's a group who's really trained it at being collaborative and trying to, you know, undo that situation in a way that's very inclusive. So I think it's just so important to be a part of group endeavors. It really helps us observe cooperation, observe goodwill. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
The Knowledge Book, currently studied in 39 countries and 15 languages around the world, accelerates our evolution, takes us out of depression, offers universal truth, protects us, and makes us stronger, both spiritually and physically. So if you are interested in the Knowledge Book, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on transformationtalkradio.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy, in the break, you were saying something very meaningful to me, and I was hoping you could share it with the listeners.
Sure. What I was noticing, Steve, was you were saying some very meaningful things about, you know, how we can engage, how we can work collaboratively in a way. And I don't want to in any way detract from that. It is important for us to be finding ways to act in kind and compassionate ways. Personally, I think it's harder to find ways compassionately to say no, to say this is not okay. And so I'd like to bring the conversation back to how it is that we do that not only individually but in group, how it is that we find ways to put up that defensive wall that will protect people from harm. How is it that we let others know, let the world know that we will not tolerate this type of harm? That, I think, is a particularly difficult practice. And so I just want to focus us on that. And yeah. One aspect of that is speech, right? Energy follows thought. So how we talk about each other, we can even start there.
It sounds good. Sounds good. And especially in this day and age, we find ourselves, as we've said time and time again, that criticism seems to give us a greater sense of our own selves. Social media seems to fuel that so much. So really, how do we add to that us versus them by being in a constant criticizing one another and allowing that to sort of have us feel important that we get a like or a thumbs up for our criticism of somebody, that kind of activity has to be stopped.
You mentioned in another show, Steve, the four gates as a way of monitoring our speech, and that's been so meaningful to me. I'd just like to repeat it for our listeners if they're not familiar with it. But it's four questions that you can pose to yourself before you speak, or if you are evaluating the speech of others. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Does it enhance the silence? In other words, is it better than saying nothing? And I think that's particularly important now when people seem to be much more ready in public environments to use language in a way that humiliates or demeans or confuses others.
Well, and Dorothy, also, I think that if we point out that word necessary, just as you were saying, that there really is a time to stop harm, that the answer is yes. Like, my speech and speaking up is necessary, that that may come to the forefront as we pass these gates, that we may be saying, is it necessary first? We say this quite a bit, you know, true, necessary, kind. It might be switched to necessary, true, and kind.
Yeah, and the, you know, when we hear people making those dichotomies, creating those us-them contrasts that result in divisiveness, we can start, we can interject the third and fourth and fifth and sixth, you know, other option, so that we're filling in the middle ground. We're making it less likely that people can create the other as an object of harm.
And, you know, this idea of also watching language and even observing oneself, there was, we were talking about the violence in language one time, and I remember saying something to you on air saying, Dorothy, do you want to give it a shot? You know, we don't realize that our language itself, you've mentioned that there's a difference between saying somebody's an illegal alien and what does that mean versus an asylum seeker. And so it can really be a process of not only watching our own language, but finding alternatives that actually hold the truth, that are kind, necessary, and hold truth to be more exact than the other, which is demeaning or divisive.
And this goes along with that whole kind of reflex to criticism, being very, very, very careful how we describe someone that we do not agree with. That's a situation in which the likelihood of our coming out with speech, with harmful imagery in our speech, I think gets greater.
Yes, yes. Well, Dorothy, we are about to wrap up this show, so I just wondered if you have any final words. I wanted to just tell our listeners that next week we're going to talk about ways to ensure that inclusive social action takes place, so I look forward to that, you know, because it is that necessary these days. But I just wondered any like that, but well, usually have a nice chat.
Yeah. I would just encourage people to, you know, to engage seriously with this issue and recognize that this is a new muscle that we're suggesting that we all develop. This is a new way of being, and it takes practice, and it takes conscious practice until it becomes, you know, the positive reflexive behavior. But I would invite you, because I think it can be helpful to look at esotericstudies.net, look at our white papers on inclusive social action, and let us know either at the radio show or at School for Esoteric Studies what you think.
And I would just add once again to bring forward, well, I would say yes, indeed, the white papers are questioners, really, indeed, take a look at that. But that... we don't always see this, you know, conflict. We see so much conflict today and divisiveness that we don't see it as an obstacle, but as an opportunity to move forward and to bring about change. You know, that we don't move toward always be pushing against it, towards resistance so much as finding a way to create a different paradigm. Certainly, indeed, when there is harm being done, we need to say, no, stop. But this new paradigm is about finding solutions that, you know, can bring about, as I said before, a greater harmony when it's all done. Inclusivity means everyone, even those who are perpetrating the harm and don't realize the damage they do. May it be so that they come to see, you know, within the light their errors. Dorothy, thank you so much for your wonderful insights. And listeners, thank you for joining us. You can always find our archives, if you'd love, any other parts of this conversation, if you missed the first few weeks, at Transformation Talk Radio or at SpiritFireRadio.com. And we'll be back with you next week. Thanks, Dorothy.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.